Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. And it's 9 o'clock, so that means we're going to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bringing in our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well this morning. How you guys doing?
We are doing well as well. And another guy doing well is Tom Brady, back in a conference championship game, the 14th time in his career with the Tampa Bay Bucs, obviously the first time in the NFC title game. What do you think it says about Brady that he's gotten this franchise that's been so down in the dumps for so long here to this point in year one?
I mean, it's definitely remarkable. I think people forget, unless you were a Buccaneers fan, it's hard to forget how bad they really were. I mean, this was a really bad team, you know? It seems like a while ago that Jameis was throwing, you know, 30 interceptions and you know, Bruce Arians was pulling out what remained of his hair. But for Tom to not only come in and affect the team the way that he did, I mean, I don't know. Look, it wasn't popular, but before, obviously, camp convened, Tom put a lot of pressure on guys to get out, you know, get together, practice, not really practice, but, you know, try to find some sense of chemistry and rhythm amongst the offensive players before camp convened. Obviously, in the pandemic, it was not a popular move by Brady, but I think it did help with some of those guys. I think he did press them to add Antonio Brown, also not popular, but something that, you know, has helped the franchise. The idea that they went all in on Tom really did come to fruition. You know, that was something that Jason Light, the general manager, and the head coach, Bruce Arians, that was the term they coined by going and getting Tom Brady. And I think every move that they've made since then really has reflected that. And I think what's really interesting is if Brady's serious about returning in 2021, and he really does feel that 2021 is their peak, quote-unquote, peak season, what's happening right now is even more impressive, particularly if they can manage to make it to the Super Bowl.
So, Charles, NFL announces this week, basically, the combine isn't happening. What's it going to be like? What's the impact of that on this offseason?
They're changing formats. I enjoyed that term. We're changing formats, and the format is just not happening. So, look, this is going to be interesting because I think one of the COVID sort of holdovers that I think could end up happening is how personnel departments handle their scouting. I was talking to a GM about, like, prior to this announcement even coming out, about the combine, and, you know, he told me, he said, look, last year, because of the schedule change, a lot of the things happening later at night, he had a quick turnaround. He only went in for a couple of days. He said to evaluate. I know it was to go and, you know, illegally talk to agents about free agents and whatnot, but he pretty much indicated, like, hey, I don't feel like I have to go anymore. Like, I don't need to be there for the whole run. And I said, well, what about talking to these kids in-person interviews? He's like, I did the whole thing on live stream or whatever, you know, I think it was Microsoft Teams or whatever they're using at that time, Zoom. This was even before all this stuff got up and running. But he said that it for the 15 minutes that we had the kids, you know, it was fine. You know, I felt like I was in the room. I was watching the whole thing happen, and anybody we want to go in depth on, we were able to do that on campus later, or, you know, in private, you know, visits. And so it felt like teams were starting to consider rolling back a little bit of their combine presence. Some teams didn't send their full scouting staff. And so I think this change is just going to open up more possibilities in terms of what teams have to look at and how they feel about the information that they're coming out with. I feel like one interesting thing about COVID is it's forced a lot of teams to push information digitally rather than the, I don't want to say archaic, but just sort of the tradition of all the in-person stuff. I think a lot of that in-person stuff is you're going to see at least portions of it peeled back as teams say, hey, we're figuring out that we don't necessarily have to be in person for a lot of the things that we do now.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, the saga with Deshaun Watson continues to unfold. Seems very frustrated. Reports coming out suggesting that some inside the Texans organization believe that he's played his last snap with them already. How do you see this ending in Houston with Deshaun Watson, and what do you think about all this?
He's elevating it. I mean, that's the interesting thing about this is that I think when initially he was unhappy with how the process had been working, one of the things I'll tell you about Watson is that he has been uncomfortable for a couple of years now in that organization in terms of how they were building, the punishment he was taking. I think the fact that, you know, they were constantly tinkering with the offensive line, I think he was frustrated to some degree with Bill O'Brien. So this isn't new. It didn't all sort of happen at once. I think there was sort of a build up there where he felt like, I'm taking a beating here. We're not really turning a corner with Bill. There's all this, you know, this front office shuffling. You know, when the DeAndre Hopkins trade happened, I actually think that was sort of what snapped things for him. I think he had kind of had it at that point. He was like, look, either they're going to start to make changes and take into account how I feel about these changes, or I'm just not going to stay here because I feel like I'm starting to, you know, portions of my career are getting wasted. And however you feel about that, it is what it is, you know, and he is a player who I think feels like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and so many other guys before him, quarterbacks reach a certain level and they want some input or to be taken seriously or at least someone to listen when they talk. And I think he feels like that's just not happening here. The Texans, when he initially essentially voiced his displeasure internally about wanting to be more involved, I think they felt like, you know, this wasn't something that would graduate to the degree that it has. And then now that it has, and you have other people like Andre Johnson, who's still got a ton of respect in that locker room, you know, other people connected to the Texans leaving, saying things about Jack Easterby and the front office and ownership and, you know, Cal McNair getting called Tommy Boy internally there. Like, it's just a huge mess. And I think the reason why people in the Texans feel like he may have played his last snap is because he's not relenting. Nothing's changed. He hasn't, nothing has gotten better. It's only gotten worse over the last month. And at some point, Cal McNair is going to have to sit there and look at Deshaun Watson's agent, Javid Mulugeta, and say, okay, tell us, okay, what's the package out there? Like, you know, hunt it. If you can find 3 first round picks, maybe it becomes like a Jalen Ramsey situation where even though the owner doesn't want to give him up, the return is to the point where it's just like, look, we're not, this is the best we're going to get, and the guy doesn't want to be here. We got to do something.
Okay. Well, how does it end? I want your prediction. You promised us a couple weeks ago, per my inaccurate tweet, that Arthur Smith was not going to get a head coaching job. So,
That was a promise? Now it's a promise.
Good Lord, Joe.
I told you per my inaccurate tweet.
Yeah, a couple other jobs also opened after I ran my mouth off. So, you know, Doug Peterson getting fired. I mean, anyway, whatever. Yeah, it wasn't a great call, obviously, Arthur Smith. It turned out, by the way, Brian Daboll maybe wasn't talented in the field after all.
The Bills fanboys are going to be up in arms. Well, the Bills fanboys are they're probably not going to come back and apologize. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, do you think, because I still, you know, we've seen some situations like this where, you know, still in the end, like it just can't work out or they're not going to move him. Do you think he does get moved? And if you had to pick a team, Niners, Dolphins, anyone that really stands out to you?
I mean, if you want to talk about who has the ammunition and the motivation, I mean, I think the Jets, you know, the Jets, it's clear that the Jets would like, you know, I think the Jets, it'll be interesting to see how the evaluation of Sam Darnold goes now, because I think when they were focused in on Trevor Lawrence and thought they were going to have the number one pick, the thought process inside the franchise was Sam needs it. Like, they didn't kill Sam Darnold. That was the interesting thing. Like, they were very careful about, you know, really not disparaging him. They're just like, look, we feel like he probably needs a fresh start. Like, he's gone through a lot here. The Adam Gase thing has not been easy on him. And it would, you know, he's still got the talent we thought he did, but we really need a fresh start outside the organization. So I think the litany of draft picks that the Jets have, the idea that if Sam Darnold, his evaluation is not where it needs to be against some of these other quarterbacks, whether it's Justin Fields or Zach Wilson or whoever, and you could use that second pick on him, Watson's obviously the commodity that you would want to get. And salary-wise, because, you know, some of the guarantees are going to accelerate for the Texans if they were to trade him, his salary is not great, but it's not necessarily horrific for knowing the known commodity you're going to get. Now, the question is, can you build out the rest of the team? Because I think the Jets' offensive roster is worse than the Texans. So he would have to, he would have to agree to a trade to the Jets, and that would complicate things. I think he does want to go to Miami. I don't know about Miami. I mean, for them to pull on two of that quickly, I think the deal would have to be not as one-sided as it might be if you're dealing with a team like the Jets. I do think the Rams are going to look to see if they can improve on Jared Goff. I do think that the 49ers are going to look to see if they can improve on Jimmy Garoppolo. Drew Brees retires. You know, Taysom Hill is supposed to be the guy who takes the reins there. But again, I would be surprised if there wasn't some poking around by the Saints. So I think there are going to be a number of teams that have great offensive coaches who really want the most dynamic quarterback they can possibly find. And that's going to be Watson. So in terms of a prediction, I tend to point out where the cap can make it work and the ammunition is there. So the Jets have that. The Miami Dolphins have that if Houston is interested in Tua. And, you know, I think that those are probably the two destinations that make a little bit more sense. And he would be amenable to going to a place like Miami.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, last thing for you here. Obviously, the conference championship weekend coming up, the Packers and the Bucks in the NFC, the Bills and the Chiefs in the AFC. What's the more intriguing matchup to you, and who do you think winds up in the Super Bowl?
They're both great games. I mean, they're great games for different reasons. You know, I think that if for the Chiefs, if there's one team you're kind of scared of, you're a little nervous about, it's the Bills. Because, I mean, the way that the Bills defense played to advance into this game, the season that Josh Allen had, the looseness in that organization. I mean, the Bills, that's one of the weird things is when you talk to people in that organization, they're just not uptight about being in this situation, which you would think they would be, but I think they feel like they're ahead of schedule. Like I don't think they felt like, hey, we're really going to be on the doorstep of the Super Bowl at this point, but things have gone great. All these moves have worked out, and no one is sitting here feeling like if we don't win in this situation, we've choked something away. So, you know, conversely, you have Kansas City. I think there is I don't want to say tightness in the organization, but the health of Patrick Mahomes. I think they know that this has been a season where they've overcome a lot of different things that have happened in the organization as far as, you know, injuries, close calls, everybody's giving them their best shot. So I'd say the pressure is probably more on Kansas City. That puts a lot of intrigue on that game. And then when you just look at Brady and Rodgers, to have two guys, 43 and 37 in a game like this, playing at the level that those two are, and the season of perfection for Aaron Rodgers, that's just been amazing. Either those teams advances, and that's going to be the storyline of the Super Bowl. I don't think it's going to be the AFC side. I think this is the NFC year where we're sitting there going, how did this guy make it? How did he put this season together, whether it's Tom and the Buccaneers or Aaron and the Packers. So for the year everybody went through, fans, teams, all the pandemic mess, everything, to get to this point where no matter what happens now moving forward, I think people are going to have a lot of fun watching football, and this is probably the best case scenario the NFL could have asked for.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Sorry about the noise today.
No, I thought you're all good. Charles Robinson, one of the best in the business, who joins us every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what he had to say here, and make sure you're tuning in all hour long. You'll have your chance to win a pair of Predators tickets tonight to take on the Carolina Hurricanes at Bridgestone Arena. Just be listening for the cue to call, and you'll have your opportunity to win. All that coming up, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, Smashville Live returns tomorrow night on 102.5 The Game, and tomorrow night's guest is former Preds goalie Tomas Vokoun. The show will air every Wednesday during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And something new this year, you can watch the show from your own home. We're going virtual, and you can see it on the 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. So make sure you're joining us tomorrow night and every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, will join us at 9:30. So we'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators with him. But, Joe, we had Charles Robinson on from Yahoo Sports in the last segment, and it's interesting. Like, you're looking ahead to conference championship weekend this weekend, and I'm just going through my head of the potential Super Bowl matchups and trying to determine which one is the most intriguing. Like, you've got, if the one seed's advanced, you've got Mahomes versus Rodgers. If it's not, you've got maybe Brady's versus Mahomes, and the conversation of the greatest quarterbacks of all time entering into the discussion then. You've also got, you know, the Bills with an opportunity to do something that they've never done before, maybe go win a Super Bowl and getting back to this level of prominence. There's a ton of storylines, and I agree with Charles. Like, getting to this point, given this NFL season, with the pandemic and everything that, you know, that's gone into trying to make this season work, I don't know if you could have asked for a better or more intriguing Final Four.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, look, I think we all knew that, you know, Drew Brees, this was probably it. I mean, there was a sentimental, you know, reason to want to see the Saints. And I still think the Saints are better than the Bucs. But, hey, I mean, Brady right now is just – he's just a better quarterback at this point than Brees, you know. So I thought, you know, I looked forward to Saints-Packers, and that obviously didn't happen. But – and, you know, I thought that the Ravens would beat the Bills. So, you know, I thought the Ravens Chiefs coming all the way back around to being, oh, they are the top two in the AFC. It would have been interesting. But, yeah, you can't complain about these matchups. I mean, they're pretty good. I'm going to stick with my belief that, you know, the Bills aren't as scary to the Chiefs as some people think. But, hey, they could certainly prove me wrong. They can score. They can throw. They can score. I think if Mahomes is okay, I really like the Chiefs there. And I like the Packers too. I mean, I think we're going to be getting a rematch of a classic old Super Bowl here. Although the Bucks, you know, they're getting a little healthier on the defensive front. And you can't ignore what they did to the Packers the first time around. I mean, obviously, they had a great formula and made the Packers look on that one day like no other team has been able to do this year.
They did, and getting Vita Vea back into the mix there as well, going to help them up front like you talked about. If you're trying to handpick a Super Bowl, like from just an intrigue standpoint, not who's the best team, not, you know, what's going to be, I guess, the greatest game, what storyline would interest you the most heading into the Super Bowl? Would it be Rodgers versus Mahomes?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the top two quarterbacks in the league, with apologies to Josh Allen, who's certainly is up there, but the top two quarterbacks in the league this year were Rodgers and Mahomes. I don't think it's really an MVP debate. I think Rodgers is going to win it. I just think you can't ignore his numbers, his performance, and, you know, his relative supporting cast in that he's going to win it. But it's still the top two for the award. And I think the top two people playing the most important position in the NFL. So whenever, if you have a chance for that as your Super Bowl, plus, again, the long-ago history, I think is, you know, would be fun during the build-up to the game. That would be my hand-picked Super Bowl. It's also what I think will happen.
It's interesting. We hear Charles Robinson talk about Deshaun Watson and the situation going on right now in Houston. And everybody's made the link to the Dolphins, and maybe Deshaun Watson ending up in Miami. The cap space is there. They've got some intriguing options that they'd be able to send back to Houston in a trade. But I start looking around the rest of the league, and San Francisco comes to mind. I mean, can you imagine if San Francisco is healthy next year and they've got that line and Nick Bosa's back in the fold? I know that they don't have the greatest weapons offensively, and they still have a lot to be desired, you know, from a pass-catching standpoint outside of George Kittle. Can you imagine Deshaun Watson on that offense with that defense surrounding him and the team they could have? I mean, you talk about Drew Brees leaving New Orleans. If somehow Sean Payton and Drew Brees would be able to find a way to bring Deshaun Watson into the fold, like the options that are out there for maybe Deshaun Watson to end up at, very intriguing. I mean, I guess the Jets would be an intriguing option. It'd be interesting to see how much better Deshaun Watson would make them immediately. But when you start thinking about the Dolphins and maybe the 49ers and the Saints, that could get very interesting in the NFL if he's ultimately dealt and Houston is not able to resolve this.
Yeah, now, of course, with the Niners, Bosa was reported to be in the package going back. That's the thing, too. Like, how many proven players, along with draft picks, have to be in that deal going back to get Watson? But, I mean, gosh, it's not like you're going to completely strip these teams of their talent. I mean, immediately you think about Shanahan with Watson. You think about, like you said, that Miami team with Watson. The Jets is still, man, I don't know. I I have my hesitation for him with that situation.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd waive that no trade clause to go to the Jets.
Yeah, I don't know. You might want to hold on to that for that one. But, yeah, I mean, just about every NFL fan base right now is like, man, just imagine, what would it take? You know, I mean, the Bears to have another chance when they should have drafted him in the first place, you know, to go get him with a lot of what they have. I mean, it's and, you know, if you're the Texans and you get to the point where you just feel like there's just no way. I mean, we have to do this. That's not a position of strength, but the number of suitors, you can still end up getting an awfully nice haul back if you have a lot of people in the bidding war.
And it's interesting, you know, we talked about the comments made by Andre Johnson the other day and just the toxic environment right now around Houston. If this goes south and they're not able to work this out with Deshaun Watson, that franchise is in bad, bad shape, because Deshaun Watson, players like that, they don't just walk through that door every year. It's going to be a mess. And if you're a Titans fan, you're enjoying the heck out of this right now and hoping Deshaun Watson ends up somewhere else besides in your division.
Yeah, you really like the Niners talk, you know, like get them out of the conference altogether. You know, I mean, the division's about to add Trevor Lawrence, you know, so it's already going to get tougher there. And then you don't know what the Colts are going to do yet, but, you know, obviously they're, I think, a quarterback upgrade away from being really good. So if you can get rid of Watson in Houston and let Houston just, you know, kind of start over, that's a good deal for you and your short-term prospects moving forward.
When we come back, we'll get into the latest with the Nashville Predators. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst and former Preds goaltender, will join us, and we'll look ahead to the game coming up tonight against Carolina. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A tough one for the Preds last night. They fall 4-2 at the hands of new division rival, the Carolina Hurricanes. They'll be back at it tonight against Carolina as well. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And to help us look ahead to that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. C-Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
What's going on, guys? Doing great. Hey, I'm on Rex Short and Robbie. I'm happy right now.
You should be. And we're happy to have you on with us. And C-Mace, obviously, I'd love to get your area of expertise, which is goaltending, on what you've seen out of the Preds and their goalies so far through three games. UC Saros, back-to-back wins. Pekka came in last night for his first start of the season. What have you made of the goaltending and their performances so far?
I think they've been great. Obviously, Juice, you know, a couple big wins. I think he's just, like, lights out. And, you know, I was really watching Pekka last night to see, because I know it's a tough situation. He's never, I don't think it's been since 2008 or something like that, since he hasn't started opening nights. So just to see how he is handling the situation and, you know, this little transition that's going on here. And I thought he was great. That was a hard game to play for a goaltender, because he didn't get a ton of shots in terms of the amount, but like the ones that he did, Carolina just comes at you. They're a high octane offense. They're so good on the transition. He had a ton of like grade A, high quality, high danger, whatever you want to call them, scoring chances, and not just your typical ones, ones that should have been in the back of the net. And I just thought with the body language, the way that he recovered from giving up a goal, I thought he was awesome. He gave them a chance to win. So, and at the end of the day, that's all you can ask for your goaltender, and made the saves that, you know, you need to make when you're playing a team like Carolina to give the guys an opportunity to win. Unfortunately, you know, Carolina's transition, they're sick. Like they're one of the fastest teams in the league in terms of the way they play and the players that they have. You know, that turnover in the third period really hurt them. But all in all, I've been really, really happy with the goaltending. It's only three games, but they're off to a good start, both guys.
CMS, let's take Forsberg out of this question because obviously he's scoring 56 goals this year. Other than him, one guy on this team through three games who's really standing out to you and impressing you.
Man, you know, one guy's hard to pick. I could list 100 guys. I thought Matt Duchene last night had his best game. He didn't get on the score sheet, but I thought he's generating offense. And the biggest thing to me about this team, and I won't pick one guy. I'll pick their identity as a team because it's been talked about ad nauseum in the offseason. You know, as analysts, we're getting all the sound bites from the players, from the coaches, and you know, at the beginning of the year, any teams, you know, they've got, you know, optimism through the roof. You know, you got a clean start, and you say all the right things, and you know, you buy into the team concept. But as soon as the games start, you know exactly if that team is going to do what they say, and if that's really who they're going to be. So to me, I think I have to give a collective, you know, choice here to the whole team because I just, even last night's game, I think as a fan, as an analyst, like I can watch a game like that. They lose the game. Obviously, they won't win. We want them to win every single game, but they played a good hockey game. They worked their butts off. You know, there's a couple mistakes. There's going to be mistakes. And sometimes you have to tip your cap to the other team that they capitalize on their great opportunities. But I've just really been impressed with the effort, the way they're playing. And, you know, you talk about being hard to play against and a team that, you know, it plays a certain way and has the identity that the Predators are playing with so far. That's hard to play against. That's the type of team with that style of play and attention to detail that can have great success in the playoffs because they have all the intangibles on the roster. They have the makeup of a team, you know, that can have a lot of success in the playoffs. And I didn't feel that last year. I didn't feel that the year before, that they had the right balance, that they had the right attitude. They had good hockey teams. But to me, I don't know if you guys would agree. I've just been really impressed with the brand of hockey that they're playing.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us, brought to you by Coleman Tractor. And C. Mace, I do agree. I've been impressed with what I've seen so far from some of the new guys, but a guy that we're used to being productive as well in Philip Forsberg, Joe mentioned it, off to a great start this year, three goals in three games. And what stood out to me is just the commitment level he's shown playing a 200-foot game. A couple of the goals that he scored started with plays that he's made in the defensive zone. What stood out to you about Forsberg so far? And we've always talked about him maybe having another level that he can reach. If he's able to reach that, what do you think his potential is in terms of some of the best wingers in this league?
I honestly think that he can be right up there with, you know, pick a guy. You know, he's going to be up there with any of them. This guy is a fierce, fierce competitor. He's got extremely high expectations. He's extremely hard on himself. He's very candid and honest when he's not playing well. But this is a guy, he wants to win. He wants to be the best. And anything less is unacceptable to him. So I feel like, you know, with those intangibles, and you got to forget, like sometimes you forget, he's still only 25 years old. He's still a young man. And, you know, he's only going to continue to get better. And I think, as you mentioned, you know, the focus, I think, with John Hines coming in last year with Philip Forsberg was the attention to detail. I said, you know what, don't put so much pressure on yourself to get points, you know, to look at the score sheet and be disappointed. If you take care of the details, the points are going to come. And I think, you know, that kind of transcends with Matt Duchene and the Joppa line. And I think they're really embracing that. Like the way they've been playing, they were awesome last night. That whole line was awesome. And you can see the offense that they generate. I mean, you guys know a couple of years ago when the Joppa line was a force every night. They were just so hard to contain. And, you know, they have that chemistry. And now they've got that fire and that next gear that, you know, we've come to love with that line. So I think And if you get Joey going too, you know Arby's going to be going every night, whether, you know, it's good or bad, you're going to get everything. And Joey seems to be going as well. And then you put Phil on top of that with, you know, he seems like a man on a mission so far this season. But I think you can put, he's in the conversation with anybody if he can play at that level or close to it for an entire season.
On that Duchesne line, Chris, once Granlund gets back, which won't be too long now, what do you think the best combination is there?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Initially I thought it was going to be, I thought it would be Duchesne, Grant, and Cunning. I think Eric Hall is playing well. He offers, a really good element to that line with the grit. He's a hard, working, fast player. He gets to the net very well, and he shoots the puck a lot. I think when you shoot the puck a lot, too, the way that they play right now, I think, Cunning's got on the score sheet a couple times. You know, you're kind of waiting for Duchesne to break out here, but they're creating chances. I mean, that's a tough one. It'll be interesting to see how they handle Granlund upon his return, because, you know, do they start him out on the third or fourth line and give him some minutes down there to, you know, get back into game shape, or do they try to throw him on that line? But I really think that second line, as we talked about too, a lot last year, a lot the year before, is you need a productive second line to take those matchups away from the Joffre line. And it just creates a lot more problems for the opposition. When you only have the one line, it's easy. You just put your best checking line, when you're in the defensive zone, you put your just best checking line against the Joffre line and try to take your chances with the other ones. But if you can find the right combination between those four guys, is what I'm thinking, Halla, Cunning, Duchesne, and Granlund, it's going to be something I think they'll tweak and until they find the right combination. But I think they're playing well right now.
See, Mace, it's obviously still very early into the season, and this has an opportunity to change as the season goes on here. But through three games, Roman Josi's time on the penalty kill is down pretty significantly, and John Hines talked about those being really hard minutes yesterday. What do you think that does for Roman Josi not to have to play as many minutes on the penalty kill? How much do you think that could free him up down the stretch here?
Well, that's why they did it. That's exactly why they did it, because, you want your best players at 100% come, crunch time, come playoffs, if you're fighting to get in the playoffs, you want them to have everything left in the tank. And I think having so far Benning and Borowiecki, these are guys that have played against other top lines and had success. They've shut down. They can, as you said, eat up the penalty kill minutes for Roman Josi. So he's not out there blocking shots, and those are hard minutes. And those are the ones, that really wear you down physically. So I think for him, and that's another, it's a funny thing too, is, the defensemen haven't really got involved in much of the offense so far this year. So to have him, as close to 100% as possible, and, maybe Ryan Ellis too, or whoever, just have a little less of those taxing hard minutes, I think is going to just pay big dividends, because health, especially in a short season like this, health is everything, because you play so many games in the condensed schedule.
Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. See, Mace, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us, and we'll look forward to the game tonight against Carolina.
Thanks, guys. Great chat. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Chris Mason, one of our favorites here on the show on Robbie and Rexard. When we come back, we'll react to some of what C-Mace had to say there and also revisit our poll question of the day. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rexard here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexard here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexard, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we've been talking about it all morning with Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt being fired yesterday, Philip Fulmer retiring, the investigation going on right now, and then looking ahead to what it's going to look like. The new AD, that hire, who's going to hire the head coach, what's the head coach going to look like, who's interested in this job. And yet another element has been added to this story while we've been on the air today. And this coming from Dan Patrick, of course, longtime ESPN anchor now with the Dan Patrick Show. Obviously does a great job, very, very well-respected in the business. He was on his show earlier and was talking about Jeremy Pruitt, how Tennessee got into this situation, and some information that has been told to him from a source of exactly what was going down in some instances with Tennessee and their recruits. Here's what Dan Patrick had to say.
I was told that, you know, there's a few things that are going on here. And I asked my source, I said, how did they get these assistant coaches on recruiting violations? And he said, well, they put money into McDonald's bags and gave them to the recruits when they came on campus. Some of the, you know, the campus visits were not organized or they were not above board, but they were handing out cash. I don't know if it was through the drive-thru.
That's a Happy Meal.
So you literally had bagmen, and they put the cash in McDonald's bags and handed it to the recruits. My source said they were so in your face with this. They weren't even trying to hide it.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. McDonald's bags. Coaches handing out McDonald's bags filled with money to recruits. I mean, this is incredible, Joe Rex wrote.
Well, it's funny. I'm going to say something about Dan Patrick. I've liked Dan Patrick for a long time. He does a nice job, good show, loved him on ESPN. He had some terribly wrong stuff about the Big Ten things this fall. Like, I hope he's right, because this is amazing. I mean, this is fodder for months and months. I mean, we can make Happy Meal jokes. I mean, my gosh, the McRib. I just tweeted, like, what color are Shamrock Shakes? Oh, they're green, baby. I mean, we can have so much fun with this. I don't know if it's true. I will say this, too. Jason Witten, please stop. Please stop with this crap. Let's go through all the old Vols players who could be the head coach. It happens every coaching search. Al Wilson. How about Peyton? Why can't Peyton be the coach and Jason Witten be his OC? That's dumb. I really hope he got a good source on the McDonald's bags. That's amazing. That is some old school Jeremy Pruitt, old school ball coach. Going to be physical. Going to get in there and get after his guys. And by golly, we're just going to use actual bags of cash. Everybody else out there is giving players unmarked cards to bank accounts that can't be traced. You know what? We're giving them freaking bags of cash and McDonald's bags. I love it.
It almost makes me want to go out and rehire him. If this is true and that's what just happened, just bring him back. Why not?
I mean, honestly, this has got to help his next job, because he is bringing this back all the way around to the old days. Okay. Good for you, Jay. I mean, I hope this is true. I need that report now. I need to see McDonald's in the report.
I always thought a Big Mac tasted like $1 million.
Yeah, very nicely done, Porth.
Oh, yes. We can't get out of this show without a Porth dad joke.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine what this conversation would have been like with Pruitt to his assistant coaches and just how the distribution of these McDonald's bags would have taken place. Like, well, what you need to do is – you need to go through the drive-thru down there in East Knoxville, pick up a Happy Meal, and make sure that you've got a couple Big Macs blocking off the cash so that if anybody you got any prying eyes, you can't see it. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what this could look like.
Oh, man. And, like, can you imagine him, like, teaching, like, the guys how to put the cash in? Kind of like he tried to teach Blake Topmeier about, yardage
down
markers,
marker.
You know? Yeah. Just very, very.
You put the cash in first,
out.
Then you put the cheeseburger in.
Corner don't split the zone and get to the sticks, okay, which is the first down marker, in case you don't know.
By the way, I hope that Jeremy Pruitt was paying close attention yesterday, to see, like, Blake has the whole story yesterday. After having such a wonderful fall of interaction with him, I'm sure that really warmed Jeremy's heart.
Do you think Pruitt told Blake how to go to McDonald's?
Maybe so.
Hey Blake, it's down this street and that street, and then you'll get to the McDonald's in East Knoxville.
Well, I hope he told him, like, the McDonald's that wasn't handing out bags of cash. You don't want someone else to end up with the money.
Yeah.
Let's
go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, I wanted a McRib and I got a McMoney. That's a good one. I like that.
I mean, how many times have you been screwed at the drive thru?
That'd be a heck of a surprise. Wow.
Right,
there's $5,000 worth of cash in here. My goodness.
Like, I've gotten an extra fry before and I'm like, well, hey, I mean, I could go back, but I guess I'll keep the extra fry. I've never had this.
No, that'd be one heck of a surprise.
I bet you it happened too.
Well, then
that's incredible.
Another part that Dan Patrick put out there, and again, this coming from sources of Dan Patrick, so we'll see whether or not this is actually true and this plays out. But also saying, and I don't think this is a huge surprise, that Pruitt was out the door, and that according to his source, they were going to go after Philip Fulmer as well, but the option was just put on the table for him to retire. So, look, I don't think that that's, you know, groundbreaking stuff there. Philip Fulmer did not just all of a sudden decide to get up and retire here in this situation, but that just makes the sell job they tried to put together at that press conference yesterday even more pathetic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, there's so much that was said yesterday that was just complete garbage. Like, I'd be surprised if they really – I just can't imagine that there would have been any kind of conflict there with them actually, like Fulmer saying, no, I'm staying this job. I'm hiring the next coach, and them trying to fire him. You don't want that. Again, Fulmer is a part of Tennessee lore, and whether he – you know, some people thought he stabbed Curry in the back or not. The bottom line is he did come in at a tough time, take over the job, agree to do it. I mean, he deserves some level of gratitude for that. He also had to go right here. And so from his perspective, I would imagine this took him about 5 seconds to decide, yep, see you later. Good luck, guys. But, yeah, of course, then they just have to lay it on so thick yesterday, which was unnecessary. And a lot of the stuff they said yesterday was about the fact that they don't want to pay Jeremy Pruitt. The stuff they said about Fulmer really served no purpose.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt from Camden texts in and says, speaking of former players, how do y'all feel about Jerod Mayo's name being out there? And, Joe, we talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. Jerod Mayo, a guy who is quickly climbing up the ladder in terms of coaching. I don't know whether he's ready or not for a job like this at this point, but certainly I think a bright future for Jerod Mayo. And if you're him, I don't know if you want to put that future on the line right now with Tennessee in this situation. I think if Jerod Mayo is patient, he's going to have a lot of opportunities in the future.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think it's the fact that he got a chance, Philly interviewed him for the head coach job. I mean, that's got to tell you something. Obviously, he's a fast riser. In general, I hate the got to get a Tennessee guy thing. You got to get the best coach. There's no way you can argue that he's the best coach. He hasn't been a head coach. I mean, I think someday – you may look at it and say, man, what if they had hired, you know, Mayo in 2021? Look at him now in 2027 or whatever. But, man, I just think for the most part, you need people to go through the steps to see if they can handle this level, then to this level, then to this level. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt was an effective defensive coordinator. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt is going to be a head coach again. And it's probably where he belongs as a defensive coordinator. I just think it's quite a gamble to go with someone that young who's never even been a coordinator.
And then we'll see if Jeremy Pruitt ends up back in the Nick Saban assistant coach rehabilitation program, and maybe he can hand out some McDonald's bags from there down in Tuscaloosa. We'll see how that ends up working out for him. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rexro. Joe, great stuff today. Lots of fun talking about Tennessee football.
Talk about a gift that keeps on giving. My goodness, Tennessee. I know it's not great for Tennessee fans, but man. It just never stops.
And it's great for us. And we're going to continue to monitor it over the course of the next few weeks. We'll see what else goes on with this wild football program. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.